Acts 5. This is where we've left off, and this is where we continue today. You may remember that in Acts 5, as far as last week's class, you have many people being healed. People are coming from outside the area of Jerusalem. And do you remember what is associated with the healing? At least this was a belief, and I believe that's something that was actually taking place. But people wanted to be put where? Out in the streets. So what would take place? They would be overshadowed by Peter's shadow as he walked by. There was a belief, true or not, we can't say with 100% certainty, but I think it's likely that people were being healed by Peter's shadow. Now, we talked, too, about the fact that if you have people being brought in the streets, they're being brought on beds, they're being brought on couches, two different words to describe what the rich people used, what the poor people used, then you would expect some kind of transportation. Maybe that's a donkey. Maybe a donkey is bringing in a cart. And even for an area which has some pretty wide streets, what's probably going to happen?
Crowding.
Yeah, crowding, congestion, traffic issues. And we said, too, the imperfect tense is used several times. That's continuous action. So this is something that was not just a day or two. This was lasting for weeks, perhaps months. Now, as you put all that together, what would that logically lay the foundation for? If you were involved with that, and you were trying to think, okay, what's the future going to bring? If you were a Christian, who do you think was going to show up pretty soon?
Jesus.
No, not Jesus. You're preaching, you're teaching, you're healing. The people are really enthused about Christianity. Who's probably going to be showing up on your doorstep?
Oh, the authorities.
The Jewish authorities, because you are taking people away from their group. All right, let's pick up with that. Acts 5, 17 and 18. But there is the contrast. But the high priest rose up, and all that were with him, which in the sect of the Sadducees, and they that were filled with jealousy, and laid hands on the apostles, and put them in public ward. Again, you can see how this follows the details that we've already looked at. There was tremendous growth of the church, verse 14. There were many miracles, verses 12, 15, and 16. And now you have the Jewish leaders. They have reached the point where they can't take it anymore, and they begin to act. It is the high priest along with the people who are with him. That would be the Sadducees. And what does Luke say? They were filled with jealousy. And that was because of the apostles' work and healings. So you have here really a contrast with the people, the popularity that the apostles had with them, and the Jewish officials. Now, as you start thinking about the Jews, it might be good to rehearse a little bit of history. You have, as you look at the Jews, some ritualists. You have some rationalists. And you have some people who were experts in the law, some people who would have been involved with various legal transactions. Now, as you think about those three categories, you have the ritualist, you have the rationalist, and you have the people who would be involved with some legal duties, experts in the law, and so forth. Who do you think the ritualists were? The Pharisees. They were, you know, the traditions of the elders. We've got to wash our hands, and we have to go through all these other rituals. Who were the rationalists? Very good, the Sadducees. And what do we mean when we say someone was a rationalist?
Well, they didn't believe in the resurrection.
All right, that was one of the, they didn't believe in miracles, they didn't believe in the resurrection, they didn't believe in angels. Everything had to be rational. It has to be explainable by human means. And then who would have been the people who would have been the experts in the law? They copied the law, drew up bills of sale, those kinds of things. All right, they would have been the scribes. So remember those three basic distinctions as you read through the New Testament. The Sadducees were also kind of a political class involved with the temple. Don?
Who were the priests? Pharisees or Sadducees?
When you look at the priests, I would put them more in the Sadducee category instead of the Pharisee category.
The Levites,
then. The priests were the Levites, yes. The Levites, if you're a priest, you're a Levite. You're from the tribe of Levi. But I do believe that as you look at the priests, that you would have had some who would have been among the Sadducees, not so much among the Pharisees.
Okay, because when it says high priest, if he was a Sadducee, and the crowd was a Sadducee, and they were
okay. I wouldn't say that everyone was a Sadducee. I'm just saying that there may have been some.
Okay.
And I would lean more towards the Pharisees. Lean more towards the Sadducees and the Pharisees on that question. We'll come back to the high priest in just a little bit. When you look at the word which is translated jealousy, that term is translated indignation in the King James, and that word described a passionate commitment to a person or a cause. It's used some other places in the New Testament. You may remember that, or in the book of Philippians, chapter 3, verse 6, Paul said that he was more zealous when it came to persecuting the church. That's the same idea there that you have here. It's also used over in Acts chapter 13, verse 45. One source said that this describes the fury of those opposed to the church. And another said the Sadducees had hostility occasioned by ill will. Do you think this just came up overnight as far as this indignation being filled with fury? This has been building for a while. So they've been out there for weeks, maybe months, healing. And sometimes a person is presented with a situation where they just don't know what to do. They've looked at all the options and they just can't come up with a good solution. And maybe that's what's going on in the minds of the people who are described here. Luke said that this passionate ill will, which sounds to me a lot like hate, filled the hearts of these men. If you go back and you look, Acts 5, 17 and 18, at the word which is translated filled, you find that sometimes it described a full moon, sometimes it described a swollen stream, and it was even sometimes associated with pregnant women, you know, that they were just, you know, filled, so to speak. Here it describes, here's a quote, what wholly takes possession of the mind. So as you think about that, they are consumed with the preaching of the gospel. They're just overwhelmed with this, looking for some way to try to undo what is being done by God. The word which is translated filled is used in some other places. It's used in Luke 1, 15 and 41 to describe some people who were filled with the Spirit, filled with anger, Luke 4, 28, filled with fear, Luke 5, 26, filled with irrational behavior, filled with amazement, Acts 3, 10, filled with envy, Acts 13, 45, and filled with confusion. So I give you all those references to let you know that when you think about a person being filled with something, confusion, anger, frustration, amazement, people can just be overwhelmed. Now, bear in mind what we've seen up to this point as far as church history. What's happened as far as opposition to the gospel to this point? A lot or very little?
Very little.
But now what's taking place? A lot. I mean, the religious elite are stirred up. So this is one of the turning points that you find in the book of Acts. Here it is. It's almost like the page turns. And from this point onward, we're going to see some significant opposition. Now, in Acts chapter 6, you remember that we have the seven men, so the focus changes there for a little bit. But you remember what happens in Acts chapter 7? Who dies?
Stephen
dies. Acts chapter 8 talks about the great persecution. So you have already had the seeds laid for persecution, and now you have them starting to come to fruition here in Acts chapter 5. These people are really, really hot under the collar. And had it not been for the people who had seen the miracles and maybe been healed by the apostles, I think there's a good chance that they may have killed the apostles. But because of how things worked and what God was doing, that didn't happen. Anything that you want to add or ask before we run some references? Stan?
Well, for me at least, it's easy to see why this occurred this way. As long as Jesus was alive, there's a couple of things that could happen. But one, they applied a certain amount of pressure, which ultimately built up to his crucifixion. But secondly, you could see some reluctance on the part of some of them with the idea that, okay, what he's doing we don't like, where he's headed for, we don't really want to see happen, but this could die down as quickly as
right.
It built up. But then they crucified him, and now all of a sudden it has expanded greatly. And you can understand why, as this says, then they rose up. It just erupted on their part.
Mm-hmm.
We did our best to stop this. We couldn't. What do we have to do? The frustration and all of that just exploded.
Yeah, it is. It's mushrooming to the point where it is almost out of control. Now, bear this in mind. Remember what Glenda said? Who are the rationalists? All right, they denied the resurrection, among some other things. Guess what the apostles were preaching? Do you remember back there in Acts chapter 2, verses 23 through 33? You killed him, and what happened? God raised him up, third day. Wow, that was kind of tough to take. Now, had it been just the day of Pentecost, that would have been one thing. But let's go back a little bit and see what we've got in the book of Acts. Let's go back to Acts chapter 3. Acts 3, verse 15. And killed the Prince of Life, whom what? God raised up from the dead. That's kind of like a second blow. And then as you continue to read through the book, let's see what we've got over in Acts chapter 4. We'll look at verses 1 and 2. And as they spake unto the people, the priests and the captain of the temple and the who? Sadducees came upon them, being what?
Greatly
disturbed or sore troubled. Why? Because they taught the people and proclaimed in Jesus what? The resurrection of the dead. They poked these guys in the eye again. And then as you look at Acts chapter 4, let's see what we have down there in verse 10. Be it known unto you all and to all the people of Israel that in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, whom he crucified, whom God did what? Raised him from the dead. He's the one responsible for this miracle. So you can begin to see, even with these brief snapshots, that the apostles are poking these guys in the eye again and again and again. And after people have been battered so many times, oftentimes they'll stand up and say, enough is enough. And that's why you see in Acts chapter 5, they are filled. They are overwhelmed. They are consumed with this rage, with this jealousy, with this great anger. And they feel like they've got to act. And that's exactly what we find.
Are the Sadducees the one that lead the charge?
That would be the, yes, you've got the high priest who would have been Annas or Caiaphas, and with the Sadducees, and they apparently, I'm going to deal with this a little bit more in just a minute, but they apparently now get the full Sanhedrin involved. And but let's just hold on to that thought, and we'll come back to it and see if we don't get it all. High priest could have been Annas or Caiaphas, and you have some of the henchmen, probably some of the temple guards, they laid their hands on the apostles. Verse 18. Now think about that expression. Laid their hands on them. Does that remind you of anything that we've been talking about? Let's go back to verse 18 for a hint. What's verse 18 say? All right. Let's see. Hang on there. Oh, verse 12. Well, in a contrast, verse 18 with verse 12.
It's a different kind of laying on.
Yes, thank you very much. Sorry that that took a minute for me to connect. But the apostles laid their hands on others and did what? They
healed.
They healed, they blessed, they aided people. Now you have hands being laid on the apostles. So maybe that's sort of a play on words by Luke. And after they lay hands on them, where do they put them? In the public ward. Do you think all the apostles were jailed? Possible. We don't know. And as you look at verse 29, that may indicate that all the apostles were jailed. If so, that's really interesting. That 29th verse says, but Peter and the apostles answered and said, we must obey God rather than men. So it almost seems like they rounded up all the apostles and put them into jail. Can't say for sure. We do know this. The word which is translated laid hands is used a few other times in this book, Acts 4:3, Acts 12:1, Acts 21, verse 7, and in each case it describes hostility towards Christians. When you lay hands on somebody, if you're going to, for example, you have somebody who lays hands on a child, what might they do? A couple of different ways that they might do that.
Be a loving embrace.
All right, it's that loving embrace. Let's go. You kind of gently take the hand, and then you've seen probably some parents that lay hands on a child in what kind of way? Well, I mean, just, yeah, in anger, they just about grab the ear and start dragging them, and the child goes, not because the child really wants to go, but well, I want to keep my ear. And that word which is translated laid hands here does not exactly describe kind treatment. It described a violent seizure. And that word is also used as far as how Jesus was seized, Matthew chapter 26, verse 50. Now, you don't have any mention of a beating here, but you do find that the apostles were put into some kind of, I would think, public facility, public ward. We might compare that to the city prison. Now, when you think about that, first century, something like the city prison, who are you probably going to be confined with? Yeah, you're going to be dealing with a pretty lower element of society, maybe the murderers and some people who were robbers and some folks who were not so nice. So that may have been a little bit of a surprise for the apostles. But the Sadducees, they, of course, had been afraid to arrest Jesus publicly because of the people, and they finally took him. Remember, we studied this in our Wednesday night class. When did they come get him?
At night,
very likely around midnight from the timeline that we gave. But now you have the apostles being picked up, maybe all of them, and that's what they felt that they had to do. All right, when you think about men's thinking, and this goes back to what Stan was saying earlier. A lot of times people think, well, we'll shut this down, we'll stop it, and that'll take care of it. That's probably what these fellows hope, but that was not exactly what happened. Things become even more intense. You remember what the Lord said before he goes back to heaven, the Great Commission, Matthew 28, verse 20? I will be with you, how long? Always, even to the end of the world. Do you see that promise reflected here? Yes. I mean, they're picked up, they're preaching, they're trying to do the will of God, they're picked up. And if they had been short-sighted, they might have thought, well, God is not with us, we're trying to do his will, God is not helping us, but they just needed to wait a little bit. God was with them. Glenda? Yes. Yeah. The power was still there. So whether you're dealing with Jesus personally or whether you're dealing with the Lord's power being exercised through men like the apostles, the outcome is going to be the same. And yet for a lot of people, they just don't get that message. Anybody else? Stan?
I kind of wonder verse 18, because just kind of pass over it when you read it. It says that they put them in the common prison. There could have been an alternative there. I wonder if they put them in the common prison because they thought that those people who were imprisoned in there would take care of them.
And that's, you know, that wouldn't be the first time that people have thought that. You find sometimes, I think, well, maybe not so much now with some of the rules that have changed, but in the past, law enforcement would maybe put people into an area where, for example, if someone were picked up for a misdemeanor, put them back with some hardened criminals, with some felons, and some people, if they didn't die, they were taught some lessons. So that's certainly possible. Anybody else? Steve? Well, Jesus said, you're going to be a rock. Change his name, you're going to be a rock. And that's exactly what we see. You also find Peter saying, I'm willing to die with you, willing to do whatever, go to prison. Well, that wasn't quite true when the words were said, but now that certainly is true. So you see great growth. Jesus also predicted that Peter was going to fail, and it said, when you're brought back, when you're restored, strengthen your brethren. And I think he probably did some of that as well. So yes. So
many ways to look at that. But that's one of them.
Absolutely.
Making up for the denial.
Yeah, he got off track, got back on track, and did great things. So sometimes people get so focused on what happened before, they don't look at the after. And that's unfortunate and wrong.
Don't you think that Peter, whenever the Lord looked at him after he had denied him, and the Lord looked at him and he went out and repented, that was Peter's change of heart?
I think that
it was like, almost probably a complete 180 for him at that point.
Yeah.
So by the time he gets here, he's pretty much, and pretty much there.
Yeah. Made the change. The Holy Spirit comes along for him and the other apostles, Acts chapter 2, and that surely had to be the final straw for him as far as now. I have the help I need. My choice has been made. And we're going to go forward. Now, he does have some issues a little bit later. You have over in the book of Galatians chapter 2, eating with some Gentiles, and he turns back a little bit. But still, that happens to everybody. People don't always do quite what's right. But he did become that rock and is a great example in a lot of ways, as both of you mentioned.
Well, if I put it in the context of Don Gibson today, if I had the power through Jesus Christ to go out and heal somebody, it should not reinforce my faith. It should be just as strong if I couldn't do that. But back then, when Peter couldn't go out, and the apostles go out and heal people in the name of Jesus Christ, that's about as strong and as solid as a rock as you can get. Mm-hmm. To know that you can apply Jesus' healing to people that are lame. So I think if I were put in prison and I could do that, my faith would say, hey, you can't touch me. You can't hurt me. Mm-hmm. Even if they might kill me, I'll still be alive in heaven.
Yeah. And you can take that and I think tie that in with the end of the book of John. Remember, John said many of the signs which Jesus did, which are not written in this book, but these are written so that what? You might believe. Now, can we believe based on what we read concerning signs?
Yeah.
Sure. What if, though, to use Don's illustration, what if, though, you're not reading about the signs? What if you're the one who is doing the signs? And at this point, Peter has not yet raised the dead to our knowledge. I mean, that's possible with all the miracles. But, you know, you're healing this guy who's got leprosy and this guy, you know. You start doing that, and then they toss you in prison, and you're exactly right. It's kind of like, hey, we know which side we're on, and we know where the power is. So whatever you want to do to us, it's sort of like Daniel in the lion's den. You know, it's, you know, we're going to stick with God because we know which side is right. And that should be our attitude, even though we don't have those miraculous powers today. That it? Okay. Let's move down to Acts 5, looking now at verses 19 and 20. Verse 19 says, "But an angel of the Lord by night opened the prison doors and brought them out and said, Go ye and stand and speak in the temple to the people all the words of this life." Do you think the arrest of the apostles got the people's attention, verse 18? I think they probably did. I mean, here are the guys, they're healing people, and now they're over there in the public ward. Looking at human nature, when you have someone brought up on charges or someone arrested, what's the next logical thing that goes through the minds of people? Well, okay, what's going to happen to them? Are they going to be prosecuted? Are they going to be released? Are they guilty? Are they not guilty? And that probably was what was going through the minds of people. Would they be permanently confined? Were they going to be killed? Would they be stopped as far as their preaching? God didn't let people wonder too long, did he? You have additional information here. The angel of the Lord showed up, and when did he come? He came at night, and what did he do? He opened the doors of the prison and then brought them out and said that they needed to stand and speak where? In the temple to the people. How much? All the words of life. Are we told how the angel opened the prison doors? No. I'd like to know. But God didn't choose to reveal that detail. Are we told that this was a special angel, or was it a quote-unquote regular angel? We don't know. Now, if you have the King James translation, and maybe some others, you will see the definite article is used. It was the angel of the Lord. Well, even though the King James used the definite article, there is no definite article in the original text. So don't look at that and say, well, it was a special angel. It was the angel of the Lord. Well, that's in the King James, but that's probably going just a little further than we want to go. Now, the odd thing about this, sometimes as you look at Scripture, you wonder if God doesn't have a sense of humor. And here would be one of those places where I would look at it and think God may be reflecting to some degree a sense of humor. What did the Sadducees believe? Well, okay, that's true, but that's, in this case, not the answer I want.
When they left the prison, then they didn't flee?
No, that's not it either.
What is it?
No angels. Remember? Angels don't exist. There are none. Well, who shows up to let the apostles out of prison? An angel that doesn't quote-unquote exist. Well, yeah, I know. But it's like I say, when you look at the details here, you kind of have to look at that and smile a little bit and say, God could have gotten them out in a lot of ways, couldn't he? Sure. But he decided to use an angel that the Sadducees said, oh no, those creatures don't exist. Yes. Let's see, is it maybe Acts 23? I think it's Acts 22 or 23. Now, 23:8. For the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, neither angels nor spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. So Luke, a little later in the book of Acts, makes it clear that the Sadducees, as I mentioned earlier, were the rationalists. They did not believe in those kinds of things. Now, when you look at the book of Acts, one of the items that may merit some brief attention is that you have different divine escapes. For example, you have the escape here. And you have, as you look a little bit later, in Acts chapter 12, that's Peter, Acts chapter 12, verses 8 through 11, he escapes, it's permanent. And then you also have some escapes which were not. One of those would be, another escape would be Acts chapter 16, verses 26 to 28, and then the one here leads to another rearrest. So in the book of Acts, you have six examples of angelic intervention, and obviously one of those is here. All right, when you go back and you look at the text, there's a single word which is translated brought out. When that word is used in the book of Acts, and you've got it in Acts 7:36, Acts 7:40, Acts 12, Acts 13:16, and Acts chapter 21, it normally describes either being brought out of prison or it describes Moses bringing the people out of Egypt. And that's what you have here. Why an angel led them out, we're not told. But that is a specific detail. Maybe he wanted to give them some additional instructions. We certainly do find additional information. What was his instruction to them? You need to go, stand, and you need to preach to the people all the words of this life. That in, that word that's translated go is interesting. It's also used in the Great Commission, Matthew chapter 28 and Mark chapter 16. Jesus said go, the angel comes up, frees him, and he also says go. So maybe the angel was thinking about the Great Commission. We do know the angel gave the command, teach all the words of this life. And in those words, I think there's an implication. Teach the words of this life. If you were a Jew and you heard those words, what might be running through the head? Teach the words about this life. In contrast to what? Well, that there would be that. And anything else? Yeah, the Old Testament law has been done away with. Jesus fulfilled that, as he promised in Matthew chapter 5, verses 17 and 18. So don't go out and preach about the law. The Lord has put that to an end. Pentecost has come, so you need to go and teach about Christianity. And that's exactly what happened. The ASV has, as you look at the word life, that L is capitalized. The King James uses the lowercase. I do think that life here probably is suggestive of eternal life and the religion that Christ founded. A couple of the quick points, and then we'll look at Acts chapter 5, verse 21. When you look at people who criticize the Bible, and there are several, some critics have said, look, you believe in this divine deliverance, and yet what happens to the apostles shortly after this? Probably the following day, where do the apostles end up again? They're back in a clink. And people have said, what kind of God is that? He delivers them, and then they're back in jail. If you believed in an all-powerful God, he should deliver them, and they should stay out of jail. Now, if you were talking to a coworker this week, and a coworker made that argument, how would you respond to it? Glenda?
Oh, I was scratching my head.
Okay. Well, we'll let you off the hook this time. So, who else wants to answer? Carol? There were some people who were thinking, okay, God's hand at least might be in this. Gamaliel was one of them. The Sadducees, they just couldn't quite see that. So there is that. Anything else?
Question. Is this the Gamaliel that Paul studied under?
Yes. That's what we believe. Okay. Back to the question. Why not deliver them once for all time? Okay, we'll see that a little bit later in the book of Acts, Acts chapter 16. Could we also say that it was a rebuke to the Sadducees? They're mad. The apostles are preaching this stuff about the resurrection. They are really upset, and their mindset is what? We are going to get you. We are going to stop you. We're going to lock you up. What's God do? He says, sure, okay, no problem. And who am I going to send to deliver you? I'm going to send the angel that you don't believe in. So I think it was a rebuke. And then that passage that we cited earlier, Matthew chapter 28, verse 20, I will be with you how long? I'll be with you even unto the end of the world. So here are the apostles. They're doing a great work. They're preaching. They're teaching. People are being converted. People are being healed and so forth. And lo and behold, they're locked up. Now, even with all the great faith that we've talked about, do you think that they might have wondered a little bit? Hey, God, what's going on? So what's God do? Let you sit for a little while. Bang, the angel shows up. What do you think that would do to their faith? If they needed a shot in the arm, think they got it? I would say, yeah, wow. All right, we've got a couple hands. Stan, I think you first, and then maybe Carol. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. It was Dolores.
I've been reminded of when Paul was on the road to Damascus, and Jesus says it's hard to kick against the pricks.
Yes.
And I see the parallel here. Only it's with a group of people, but is God setting them up for the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to fight against me.
Yeah. When God has, I'm going to describe this, an inflexible will, There are some things where God says, we can go a couple of ways on this, but if something is associated with God's, for example, it was God's will that Jesus die. Peter said in Acts chapter 2 that that was predetermined. It was a determinate counsel of God, as well as his foreknowledge. Men could do everything that they wanted, but that was going to happen. He would work within human free will to ensure that that did occur. And you have that here. The Christian faith is going to go forward. You can hate it, you can fight it, you can try to stop it, you can lock these guys up, you can eventually take their lives, but God said, this will prevail. My word's not going to return and be void. That's an Old Testament principle. Dolores.
God could have chosen a different path for them and not let them be in jail, but think what a testimony it was to the people who were just beginning to believe.
Yeah.
You know, they're ready to sacrifice their lives, and yet God keeps taking care of them, and, you know, this message is so important to them that they're risking everything, and it's through persecution that a lot of times we grow.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to focus on the first part of your point. The other point was good as well. But people can see something sometimes. For example, let's say mom and dad prove to a child that they're trustworthy. Child sees that. Thank you, mom. I really believe in you. A week later, might the child wonder about the trust? Sure. But the parents say, well, look what happened a week ago. Well, yes, but what? This is different. This is a new set of circumstances. Now think about some of the people who are becoming Christians. All right, they see the healings, and maybe they were healed, and the apostles are doing some great things. But now the guys leading the movement are in jail. You think that might have shaken your faith or shaken the faith of some new Christians? Uh-huh. So now you're looking and saying, okay, I wonder what's going to happen to these guys. And then all of a sudden, they were released. And as you look at the details, there was no natural explanation for that. And it's kind of like, okay, now I'm really on board. This Christianity is the real deal. God is really involved with it, and I need to stay. So not only for the apostles' faith, I do think you're exactly right that some of the people who had recently become Christians, that this also was a faith-building miracle for them. That it? Done?
I'm just listening to Stan's remark about, you know, don't kick against the goats. It's fairly easy to read this while the apostles were alive and miracles were being performed and set them apart. But after they were gone and miracles no longer happened, Christianity did not slow down.
Right.
And it spread and spread and spread, and basically it's still spreading today. So, you know, that faith, God saw the path to that. And I'm not sure that some of the earlier Christians probably would have seen that path, but it's happening.
Yeah. Well, the Bible talks about a foundation. 1 Corinthians 3, Jesus is the foundation. The apostles are tied in there as well. But the foundation was so solid that even though some of the walls have been damaged a little bit as you look at time, for example, Revelation 2 and 3, the congregations described there by John, they no longer exist. So even though there's been some crumbling, that foundation is intact. And it's still possible to build on that, and the rock will stand. And that's amazing. But it's going to be here in some form when Christ returns, because of the power of God. Okay, let's take a look at Acts chapter 5, verse 21. And when they heard this, they entered into the temple about daybreak and taught. But the high priest came, and they that were with him, and called the council together, and all the senate of the children of Israel, and sent to the prison house to have them brought. We know from verse 19, the apostles were told to go to speak to the people about the words of life, and they did what they were told. There's, in my mind, a practical lesson here. If the apostles knew and believed that it was right to do what an angel said, what about people when it comes to God's word? God's word more or less important than the word of an angel?
The word is, because the angel...
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that they're essentially the same if the angel's speaking for God.
I'm thinking of the verse in Galatians where though we are an angel from heaven, preach any other gospel.
Yeah, but there it is. Any other gospel. Mm-hmm. But we're not talking about another gospel. But right. Angel word and angel's word, very important. But if we believe that, then when we have the written word, then we should be quick to obey. So, practical point there. You also have, I think, as you look at Acts 5:21, some information about the importance when it comes to the place, as far as where they went and the time. They go about daybreak to the temple. Why do you think the place was important? Go to the temple and begin preaching. Why go there? Okay, when you look at, well, that kind of factors into the time, so I'm not going to develop that yet, but yes, you're right. People would have been gathered there. Anything else? Why go to the temple? Well, okay, people could have, morning sacrifice, that would have been something that was taking place, so you have some worshipers there. That also probably was important. What else? Remember what we said a little bit ago? They get locked up. Naturally, what are people thinking? I need to sort out those answers.
They may have run away.
Yeah, what's going to happen? Did they run away, or what's going to take place? You go to the public place, and that's a place for word to start circulating. So you have that. If the Sadducees wanted to do something naughty to the apostles, if they're over hiding in a cave somewhere, in contrast to a public place, what's going to be true? Yeah, over there in the cave, maybe they can go get them and bring them back and do whatever they want to do. But if you're going to go into a public place, then you're going to have to create quite a ruckus, especially if you have worshipers coming, and that also would have been a time for people to have the morning prayers and so forth. So when you look at the temple, as far as the time and place, this was about daybreak. This was a time when people were gathering for the activities I described, and in my mind, it also offered some measure of safety for the apostles. Let's get these guys out into an area where they're going to be seen, word can spread, and the Sadducees are going to be somewhat hesitant about coming and trying to grab them, at least immediately. So it really was a very, very smart strategy. Carol, did you have a thought?
I was just going to say in verse 26,
that they were afraid of the people. Yeah, as you look down a little bit later, that gives you an indication of what was going through the minds of the people. And that time they had to tone things down a little bit because they thought this hasn't gone very well, so let's try a different strategy.
Well, the impact on the people themselves would be much greater here. If they had gotten out of prison and went off in the corner of Jerusalem somewhere in some obscure place or building, then the people might have been saying, well, what's going on here? But it was like, whoa, they threw them in prison, and now they're right back in the middle of it.
Yeah, and I think you have to go back to Don's point that we talked about as far as a foundation. I mean, you have this great foundation laid, and it's being shaken, and it doesn't crack. I mean, they just keep building it up and building it up, and it's kind of like, wow, this must be from God. Trace?
Well, they were arrested in the temple, basically, so they put them right back where they started.
Yeah, and that says something. Either the people are crazy, only a crazy person would do that, or you really are from God. No sane person would do that unless there really was something substantial behind it, and in this case, it was deity. That question has to be answered, and the Sadducees also struggled with that, as we see from the next verses. Anybody else? Okay, let's interject verses 22 to 24. Maybe we can get at least some of that today. Starting with 22. But the officers that came found them not in the prison. And they returned and told, saying, the prison house we found shut in all safety, and keepers standing in the doors. But when we had opened, we found no man within. Now when the captain of the temple and the chief priests heard these words, they were much perplexed concerning them, whereunto this would grow. So you have the council, that would be the Sanhedrin. They're preparing to meet with the apostles. The officers, you think those were Jewish officers or Roman officers?
Jewish.
All right, I think that's probably right. The Jewish officers go to pick up the apostles. They head to the prison. They know where the apostles were, but they're not able to find these men. The prison was shut in all safety. Now, here is a place where I think tense matters. It was shut in all safety. The perfect tense is used. What would that tell us? The perfect tense. Shut in all safety, locked up. Ongoing. You know, it looks like it's not been disturbed. So you go in there and you look for these guys, but there's no jimmying of the door. There's no marks. There's no indication that there was any kind of struggle or anything like that. Then you also have the keepers. Those would have been people who were just like you would have a guard standing at a door today. That's what you would have here. There were the keepers who were standing at the doors. The facility was completely secure, and that standing of the guards is also described with the perfect tense. So everything was as it had been. It looked like, so again, that leaves some questions. How did the angels get these guys out? Did they somehow cause the guys to go into a trance for a little bit? I don't know. that information is just not given. But everything looked exactly right. The apostles were not there. The captain of the temple, that was not a military officer. That was a fellow, I'll give you this quote, who was called the man of the Temple Mount in Jewish writings. He was a priest who served as chief superintendent of the Levites and priests who stood guard at the temple. He occupied a place of dignity, second only to the high priest. And then you also have the chief priest mentioned in verse 26. You find them mentioned in the Old Testament. When you look at this, and we've seen this word before, we saw it back in Acts chapter 2. As they try to sort this out, what's the reaction? They were much perplexed. Now that's an important word. It is a word which describes someone who is aware of something. They try to figure it out, and they go through all the possibilities. And yet after they go through all the possibilities, they say, none of it fits. It's almost like a crime scene investigator. They say, well, we have four possibilities here. It's him, her, them, or it. And they look at all four and they say, it's not him, her, them, or it. So what can it possibly be? The person was killed, and we have absolutely no explanation for that. So they're really in a bind. Now, you have to go back and think about what we said from Acts 23, verse 8. As the Sadducees are processing this, they can't get their minds around it. And what was the reason for that? All right. They could not in their minds consider the miraculous. That was the most obvious. That was the only thing that could account for that. But in their minds, I can't consider that possibility. Do we still have that problem with people today?
Yes.
You try to tell, well, no, it just can't be that. I just can't listen to that. I can't consider that. Well, that is the answer. So it's amazing that people will sometimes reason in that way, but that's exactly what you find. Glenda?
I have a question. How long after the day of Pentecost do you think this was, in this time period that we're looking at now, do you think the people were still there? Are they going to come to Jerusalem for the Feast of the Passover? Or do you think it was just they had all gone back home and then the normal residents of Jerusalem were there?
I don't know. I mean, with the healings that we've had, if that turned into weeks or months, Rough guess. This could be a year after Pentecost. Maybe even a little longer. But I have no idea. Like I say, it's, you know, they've been, for the most part, pretty tolerant. When you look at the Jews, and remember again, the preaching of the resurrection, they've been going at this and going at this, and maybe in their minds thinking, well, what we did with Jesus, that didn't work out too well, we've got to be really cautious. But now, as Stan said, this just explodes, this just erupts. And it's, we can't take it anymore, we have got to act. And that's what they do, and now it backfires on them. Steve, did you have a thought too?
Well, I was just thinking, with them being the angel of the Lord taking them out of prison and them trying to figure out, they got thinking, and nobody saw anything. Nobody saw what happened, you know.
Yeah, well, you have only a couple of possibilities. Somebody broke them out. They were able, somebody left the door unlocked. You know, maybe the guards helped them, they were bribed or something. Or the apostles were able to escape on their own. But when you've got, remember again, the doors are locked, perfect tense. Everything is as it was. So it's not like they've, yeah, it's not like they've sawed off some bars. It's not like...
The door's locked, but they're not in there.
Yeah,